Chapter 15. I didn't sleep too long, because I think it was only around 10 o'clock when I woke up. I felt pretty hungry as soon as I had a cigarette. The last time I'd eaten was those two hamburgers I had with Brossard and Ackley when we went into Hagerstown to the movies. That was a long time ago. It seemed like 50 years ago. The phone was right next to me, and I started to call down and have them send up some breakfast, but I was sort of afraid they might send it up with old Maurice. If you think I was dying to see him again, you're crazy. So I just laid around in bed for a while and smoked another cigarette. I thought of giving old Jane a buzz to see if she was home yet and all, but I wasn't in the mood. What I did do, I gave old Sally Hayes a buzz. She went to Mary A. Woodruff, and I knew she was home because I'd had this letter from her a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't too crazy about her, but I'd known her for years. I used to think she was quite intelligent, in my stupidity. The reason I did was because she knew quite a lot about the theater and plays and literature and all that stuff. If somebody knows quite a lot about those things, it takes you quite a while to find out whether they're really stupid or not. Took me years to find it out in old Sally's case. I think I'd have found it out a lot sooner if we hadn't necked so damn much. My big trouble is, I always sort of think whoever I'm necking is a pretty intelligent person. It hasn't got a goddamn thing to do with it, but I keep thinking it anyway. Anyway, I gave her a buzz. First the maid answered. Then her father. Then she got on. "Sally?" I said.
"Yes. Who is this?" she said.
She was quite a little phony. I already told her father who it was. "Holden Caulfield, how are you?"
"Holden, I'm fine. How are you?"
"Swell. Listen, how are you anyway? I mean, how's school?"
"Fine," she said. "I mean, you know."
"Swell. Well, listen, I was wondering if you were busy today. It's Sunday, but there's always one or two matinees going on Sunday. Benefits and all that stuff. Would you care to go?"
"I'd love to. Grand."
"Grand. If there's one word I hate, it's grand. It's so phony." For a second, I was tempted to tell her to forget about the matinee. But we chewed the fat for a while. That is, she chewed it. You couldn't get a word in edgewise. First, she told me about some Harvard guy. It probably was a freshman, but she didn't say, naturally. That was rushing the hell out of her. Calling her up night and day. Night and day, that killed me. Then she told me about some other guy, some West Point cadet, that was cutting his throat over her, too. Big deal. I told her to meet me under the clock at the Biltmore at 2 o'clock, and not to be late, because the show probably started at 2:30. She was always late. Then I hung up. She gave me a pain in the ass, but she was very good-looking. After I made the date with old Sally, I got out of bed and got dressed and packed my bag. I took a look out the window before I left the room, though, to see how all the perverts were doing. But they had all their shades down. They were the height of modesty in the morning. Then I went down in the elevator and checked out. I didn't see old Maurice around anywhere. I didn't break my neck looking for him, naturally. The bastard. I got a cab outside the hotel, but I didn't have the faintest damn idea where I was going. I had no place to go. It was only Sunday, and I couldn't go home till Wednesday, or Tuesday the soonest. And I certainly didn't feel like going to another hotel and getting my brains beat out. So what I did, I told the driver to take me to Grand Central Station. It was right near the Biltmore, where I was meeting Sally later. And I figured what I'd do, I'd check my bags in one of those strong boxes they give you a key to, then get some breakfast. I was sort of hungry. While I was in the cab, I took out my wallet and sort of counted my money. I don't remember exactly what I had left, but it was no fortune or anything. I'd spent a king's ransom in about 2 lousy weeks. I really had. I'm a goddamn spendthrift at heart. What I don't spend, I lose. Half the time, I sort of even forget to pick up my change at restaurants and nightclubs and all. It drives my parents crazy. You can't blame them. My father's quite wealthy, though. I don't know how much he makes, he's never discussed that with me, but I imagine quite a lot. He's a corporation lawyer. Those boys really haul it in. Another reason I know he's quite well off, he's always investing money in shows on Broadway. They always flop, though, and it drives my mother crazy when he does it. She hasn't felt too healthy since my brother Allie died. She's very nervous. That's another reason why I hated like hell for her to know I got the axe again. After I put my bags in one of those strong boxes at the station, I went into this little sandwich bar and had breakfast. I had quite a large breakfast for me. Orange juice, bacon and eggs, toast and coffee. Usually I just drink some orange juice. I'm a very light eater. I really am. That's why I'm so damn skinny. I was supposed to be on this diet where you eat a lot of starches and crap to gain weight and all, but I didn't ever do it. When I'm out somewhere, I generally just eat a Swiss cheese sandwich and a malted milk. It isn't much, but you get quite a lot of vitamins in the malted milk. H.V. Caulfield. Holden Vitamin Caulfield. While I was eating my eggs, these two nuns with suitcases and all, I guess they were moving to another convent or something, and were waiting for a train, came in and sat down next to me at the counter. They didn't seem to know what the hell to do with their suitcases, so I gave them a hand. They were these very inexpensive-looking suitcases, the ones that aren't genuine leather or anything. It isn't important, I know, but I hate it when somebody has cheap suitcases. It sounds terrible to say it, but I can even get to hate somebody just looking at them if they have cheap suitcases with them. Something happened once. For a while, when I was at Elkton Hills, I roomed with this boy, Dick Slagle, that had these very inexpensive suitcases. He used to keep them under the bed, instead of on the rack, so that nobody'd see them standing next to mine. It depressed the holy hell out of me, and I kept wanting to throw mine out or something, or even trade with him. Mine came from Mark Cross, and they were genuine cowhide and all that crap, and I guess they cost quite a pretty penny. But it was a funny thing. Here's what happened. What I did, I finally put my suitcases under my bed instead of on the rack, so that old Slagle wouldn't get a goddamn inferiority complex about it. But here's what he did. The day after I put mine under my bed, he took them out and put them back on the rack. The reason he did it, it took me a while to find out, was because he wanted people to think my bags were his. He really did. He was a very funny guy that way. He was always saying snotty things about them, my suitcases, for instance. He kept saying they were too new and bourgeois. That was his favorite goddamn word. He read it somewhere or heard it somewhere. Everything I had was bourgeois as hell. Even my fountain pen was bourgeois. He borrowed it off me all the time, but it was bourgeois anyway. We only roomed together about 2 months. Then we both asked to be moved. And the funny thing was, I sort of missed him after we moved because he had a hell of a good sense of humor. And we had a lot of fun sometimes. I wouldn't be surprised if he missed me, too. At first he only used to be kidding when he called my stuff bourgeois, and I didn't give a damn, but it was sort of funny, in fact. Then, after a while, you could tell he wasn't kidding anymore. The thing is, it's really hard to be roommates with people if your suitcases are much better than theirs, if yours are really good ones and theirs aren't. You think, if they're intelligent and all, the other person, and have a good sense of humor, that they don't give a damn whose suitcases are better. But they do. They really do. It's one of the reasons why I roomed with a stupid bastard like Stradlater. At least his suitcases were as good as mine. Anyway, these two nuns were sitting next to me, and we sort of struck up a conversation. The one right next to me had one of those straw baskets that you see nuns and Salvation Army babes collecting dough with around Christmas time. You see them standing on corners, especially on Fifth Avenue, in front of the big department stores and all. Anyway, the one next to me dropped hers on the floor, and I reached down and picked it up for her. I asked her if she was out collecting money for charity and all. She said no. She said she couldn't get it in a suitcase when she was packing it, and she was just carrying it. She had a pretty nice smile when she looked at you. She had a big nose, and she had on those glasses with sort of iron rims that aren't too attractive. But she had a hell of a kind face. I thought if you were taking up a collection, I told her, I could make a small contribution. You could keep the money for when you do take up a collection.
"Oh, how very kind of you," she said.
And the other one, her friend, looked over at me. The other one was reading a little black book while she drank her coffee. It looked like a Bible, but it was too skinny. It was a Bible-type book, though. All the two of them were eating for breakfast was toast and coffee. That depressed me. I hate it if I'm eating bacon and eggs or something, and somebody else is only eating toast and coffee. They let me give them $10 as a contribution. They kept asking me if I was sure I could afford it and all. I told them I had quite a bit of money with me, but they didn't seem to believe me. They took it, though, finally. The both of them kept thanking me so much it was embarrassing. I swung the conversation around to general topics and asked them where they were going. They said they were school teachers and that they'd just come from Chicago and that they were going to start teaching at some convent on 168th Street or 186th Street or one of those streets way the hell uptown. The one next to me, with the iron glasses, said she taught English and a friend taught history in American government. Then I started wondering like a bastard what the one sitting next to me that taught English thought about, being a nun and all, when she read certain books for English. Books not necessarily with a lot of sexy stuff in them, but books with lovers and all in them. Take old Eustacia V in The Return of the Native by Thomas Hardy. She wasn't too sexy or anything, but even so, you can't help wondering what a nun maybe thinks about when she reads about old Eustacia. I didn't say anything, though, naturally. All I said was English was my best subject.
"Oh, really? I'm so glad,"
the one with the glasses that taught English said.
"What have you read this year? I'd be very interested to know."
She was really nice. "Well, most of the time we were on the Anglo-Saxons, Beowulf and old Grendel, and Lord Randall, my son, and all those things. But we had to read outside books for extra credit once in a while. I read The Return of the Native by Thomas Hardy and Romeo and Juliet and Julius..."
"Oh, Romeo and Juliet, lovely! Didn't you just love it?"
She certainly didn't sound much like a nun. "Yes, I did. I liked it a lot. There were a few things I didn't like about it, but it was quite moving on the whole."
"What didn't you like about it? Can you remember?"
"To tell you the truth, it was sort of embarrassing in a way to be talking about Romeo and Juliet with her. I mean, that play gets pretty sexy in some parts, and she was a nun and all. But she asked me, so I discussed it with her for a while. "Well, I'm not too crazy about Romeo and Juliet," I said. "I mean, I like them, but I don't know. They get pretty annoying sometimes. I mean, I felt much sorrier when old Mercutio got killed than when Romeo and Juliet did. The thing is, I never liked Romeo too much after Mercutio gets stabbed by that other man, Juliet's cousin, what's his name?
Tybalt?"
"That's right, Tybalt," I said. "I always forget that guy's name. It was Romeo's fault. I mean, I liked him, the best in the play, old Mercutio. I don't know. All those Montagues and Capulets, they're all right, especially Juliet. But Mercutio, he was... it's hard to explain. He was very smart and entertaining and all. The thing is, it drives me crazy if somebody gets killed, especially somebody very smart and entertaining and all. And it's somebody else's fault. Romeo and Juliet, at least it was their own fault."
"What school did you go to?" she asked me.
She probably wanted to get off the subject of Romeo and Juliet. I told her Pensy, and she'd heard of it. She said it was a very good school. I let it pass, though. Then the other one, the one that taught history and government, said they'd better be running along. I took the check off them, but they wouldn't let me pay for it. The one with the glasses made me give it back to her.
"You've been more than generous," she said. "You are a very sweet boy."
She certainly was nice. She reminded me a little bit of old Ernest Morrow's mother, the one I met on the train, when she smiled mostly.
"We've enjoyed talking to you so much," she said.
I said I enjoyed talking to them a lot, too. I meant it, too. I'd have enjoyed it more, though, I think, if I hadn't been sort of afraid the whole time I was talking to them that they'd all of a sudden try to find out if I was Catholic. Catholics are always trying to find out if you're a Catholic. It happens to me a lot. I know, partly because my last name is Irish, and most people of Irish descent are Catholics. As a matter of fact, my father was a Catholic once. He quit, though, when he married my mother. But Catholics are always trying to find out if you're a Catholic, even if they don't know your last name. I knew this one Catholic boy, Lewis Shaney, when I was at the Wooten School. He was the first boy I ever met there. He and I were sitting in the first two chairs outside the goddamn infirmary the day the school opened, waiting for our physicals, and we sort of struck up this conversation about tennis. He was quite interested in tennis, and so was I. He told me he went to the Nationals at Forest Hills every summer. And I told him I did too. And then we talked about certain hotshot tennis players for quite a while. He knew quite a lot about tennis for a kid his age, he really did. Then, after a while, right in the middle of the goddamn conversation, he asked me, "Did you happen to know where the Catholic Church is in town by any chance?" The thing was, you could tell by the way he asked me that he was trying to find out if I was a Catholic. He really was. Not that he was prejudiced or anything, but he just wanted to know. He was enjoying the conversation about tennis and all, but you could tell he would have enjoyed it more if I was a Catholic and all. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. I'm not saying it ruined our conversation or anything, it didn't, but it sure as hell didn't do it any good. That's why I was glad those two nuns didn't ask me if I was a Catholic. It wouldn't have spoiled the conversation if they had, but it would have been different, probably. I'm not saying I blame Catholics. I don't. I'd be the same way, probably, if I was a Catholic. It's just like those suitcases I was telling you about, in a way. All I'm saying is, it's no good for a nice conversation, that's all I'm saying. When they got up to go, the two nuns, I did something very stupid and embarrassing. I was smoking a cigarette, and when I stood up to say goodbye to them, by mistake, I blew some smoke in their face. I didn't mean to, but I did it. I apologized like a madman, and they were very polite and nice about it, but it was very embarrassing anyway. After they left, I started getting sorry that I'd only given them $10 for the collection. But the thing was, I'd made that date to go to a matinee with old Sally Hayes, and I needed to keep some dough for the tickets and stuff. I was sorry anyway, though. Goddamn money. It always ends up making you blue as hell.